Chinese literature scholar C.T. Shua calls Eileen Chang the best and most important writer of mid-century China. Many believe that had it not been for the political division between the nationalist and communist Chinese, she would have certainly won a Nobel Prize. Yet, Ms. Chang's work has been hard to find in the West because few of her works are available in translation. This year, however, two of Eileen Chang's books have been given new translations, and Ang Lee has directed a film based on one of her works. Eileen Chang is the final author in our summer series on underappreciated literature, and I'm very pleased to welcome translator Karen Kingsbury to this show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I just arrived here from South Carolina just yesterday.
Oh, that hotbed of Chinese literature, South Carolina?
Well, we're going to be growing the Chinese presence there.
Where did Eileen Chang grow up?
She grew up mostly in Shanghai, although her family also lived in Tianjin near Beijing when she was very young.
And she had a really turbulent childhood, didn't she?
Yes, most of the drama came in her teenage years when she was back in Shanghai. Her family moved back there. And the most dramatic episode occurred just after she graduated from high school. And her parents were divorced, which was already a sign of course, great tensions in the family, but it's a divorce that really grows out of the whole May 4th intellectual and cultural ferment, because her mother took advantage of all those opportunities that became available for women. But her father tended to follow a much more reactionary path.
Talking about the late 30s.
At this point, yes, yes. So in 1937, when she had just graduated from an Episcopalian, largely English language curriculum high school in Shanghai, she got into a conflict with her father. She was insufficiently respectful to her stepmother, who, like her father, smoked opium and tended towards ways that Eileen Chang probably couldn't feel comfortable with. And her father ended up beating her quite severely and then locking her up in a room for 6 months. And she contracted dysentery. She suffered terribly, and she had delusions. I mean, she went through a near-madness episode, but all of these things later became material for her as a writer.
Did she ever speak to her father or stepmother again?
Yes, but distantly.
Now, you say that this became material, so do you think it influenced her decision to become a writer when she finally made it to college?
She says in an essay that she wrote shortly thereafter that she knew from very early childhood that language was her medium, and that even at the age of 3 and 4 years old, she was being praised for her unusual facility in Chinese.
But she's also studying in an English language school, so she must have had an enriched sense of language.
Absolutely, that's the case. I would say that one of the facets of Eileen Chang's genius is her bilingual and I hesitate to use the word bicultural because I don't think there was a bifurcation. Her culture was simultaneously Chinese and English in its cultural sources.
And she even had an interest in Hemingway. I don't know how that translates into Chinese.
Well, I have to say, Hemingway was not her choice. She translated Hemingway while she was working in Hong Kong in the mid-1950s. She had fled China at that point because she found that working under the communist regime there would not be propitious for a writer of her background and her general temperament. So she went to Hong Kong. She couldn't find any other work, and she worked for the United States Information Agency, and they assigned her to translate Hemingway and also Washington Irving. And she didn't particularly like the task.
Because most foreigners fall in love with Hemingway. It's kind of interesting that she didn't. Now, let's back up a bit. So she went to college during the Japanese invasion of Shanghai. She'd grown up earlier during a lot of political turmoil where the communists and the nationalists were at each other's throats. And then the communists come to power. How much of an impact did all of this political turmoil have on her, and not only on her life, but on her literary vision?
Of course, it had an enormous impact. And yet one's tempted to think of, you know, John Keats' what's the exact term? Negative, a negative sensibility. In some ways, all of this turmoil was so intense that she created in the midst of it a space of a kind of, you may say, silence, in which she found the freedom to reflect on what she called the little things that happen between men and women. But those little things are, in many ways, the more lasting things, the things that happen even in times of relative peace and stability. So I think that that tremendous turmoil going on around her became, as it were, something that allowed her to screen out what was unnecessary and focus on what endures.
How old was she when she started publishing?
She was publishing in the school magazine when she was in high school, and she published as early as her college years. But really, we will mark the beginning of her career as 1943, when she started publishing Chinese language stories in the literary press of Shanghai at that time. In fact, she had previously written English language essays also for publication in Shanghai. But really, those Chinese stories that came out in the 1943, 1944, and up through 47 and 8, those were, that's the great sort of meteoric rise and the tremendous sort of explosion on the literary scene that she's still remembered for.
So she became famous very young. And we're talking about a woman. Would that have mattered in China?
Oh, yes, very much so. I would put her as belonging roughly to the second generation of modern women writers in Chinese literary history. And part of what she was doing was reacting against the earlier generation.
How did she react to the praise?
She viewed it with a certain kind of wry distance. She didn't ever seem to have her head turned by it, in the sense that she didn't indulge herself in obvious ways. But she could tell, I think, that that state of early fame was going to be transient because of the tremendous turmoil around her. And she spoke a great deal of a sense of a sort of imminent doom, not just for herself personally, but really for the whole cultural matrix in which she was living at that time. She could tell, I think, with a kind of fortune teller sense, a kind of prognostication about where her culture is headed, that there was great calamity coming for most of the things that she celebrated and not always celebrated, most of the things that she recorded in her fiction, that a great, great change was about to come.
I'm talking with Karen Kingsbury about Eileen Chang, whose novel Love in a Fallen City has recently been made available by the New York Review of Books in a translation from Karen Kingsbury. There's also a new translation of a story called Lust Caution by someone else. So suddenly we're starting to see a real interest in Eileen Chang after many years of relative obscurity. Now, this surprises me because she came to the United States.
Yes, this is one of the
I would have thought she would have been very well known here.
When we look back on it, we will notice these amazing, in some ways, parallel dramatic turns in her career, because when the communists came to power in China in the early 1950s, she went into eclipse. She was blacklisted for 3 decades.
Was there something about her writing that would have led to her being blacklisted? She wasn't writing.
She wasn't writing
about
proletarian
capitalism.
Realism. She wasn't writing the kind of social realism that the Communist Party leaders wanted writers to produce.
It was too much about men and women engaged in activities that end badly.
That is exactly a good way to summarize her plots. So, and the other thing is she had other black marks on her record, you might say, from the Chinese communist point of view at that time. One is that her family background was definitely aristocratic. And even though she, in fact, was very poor, she had almost no money to her name, she still had the tastes and the education and, you may say, the power the cultural capital that comes from being the bearer of that kind of tradition. And the Chinese Communist Party was a proletarian revolution, and they didn't take kindly to that type of cultural figure.
You've chosen a short passage of her work to read for us. What is it?
I'll read a short section from the beginning of a story called Red Rose, White Rose.
And why have you chosen this?
Because it may help us to see all at once two or three of her most important characteristics: psychological insight, vivid imagery. Fortunately, in a short section, you can't really get subtle plotting, but you can get some sense of her voice. This is the very beginning, and so we'll just begin. Red Rose, White Rose. There were two women in Zhan Bao's life. One he called his White Rose, the other his Red Rose. One was a spotless wife, the other a passionate mistress. Maybe every man has had two such women, two at least. Marry a red rose, and eventually she'll be a mosquito blood streak smeared on the wall, while the white one, as the poet says, is moonlight in front of my bed. Marry a white rose, and before long she'll be a grain of sticky rice that's gotten stuck to your clothes, and the red one by then is a scarlet beauty mark just over your heart.
That's just a little snippet, but it does give a sense of her language, although we're hearing her language in English. She did write well in English.
Yes.
Did she ever translate any of her own work?
Oh, indeed. I started to say there are parallel dramatic turns in her career. So she was very famous in China and then went into eclipse and then in the late 20th century rose to prominence again. She is so famous now that if you can pronounce her name as Zhang Ailing and you go into pretty much any Chinese restaurant in the United States that's staffed by Chinese-speaking people, chances are they will know exactly who you're talking about.
She also read in China?
Yes, now she's enormously famous in China, in Taiwan, in Hong Kong, in Singapore, everywhere there are Chinese-speaking people.
And why is she suddenly popular?
Well, I could give you a whole dissertation on the reasons for her rise. Obviously, it has a lot to do with cultural changes in the Chinese-speaking world. But to get back for a moment to why her career in the United States is so interesting, we might remember that in the 1950s, which is when she came to the U.S. and she immigrated and eventually became a U.S. citizen, she spent more than half of her life in this country. But those were the years when she was blacklisted in China. And those were also the years when, starting in the 50s perhaps, most American readers, as my professor C.T. Shah, whom you earlier mentioned, has noted, most American readers were probably thinking of writers like Pearl Buck or perhaps Lin Yutang when they thought of China.
And her most famous work, Love in a Fallen City, deals with the romantic adventures of Chinese men and women that, as I said, end badly. Why was she so pessimistic about love?
Well, you can say right away that her own experience of love was not what a romantic young girl might wish for. But
well, first of all, she had her parents' example. She got married and had some bad marriages?
I started to talk about reasons why the Chinese Communist Party didn't feel kindly towards her. One of them is that when she was in her 20s, she had informal marriage with a much older man who was very dashing and very persuasive, and he writes also fairly elegant Chinese. His name is Hu Lancheng, and he was also a Japanese collaborator. So she was tainted by this association, even though it was something that she broke off because he was not faithful to her.
Ang Lee is making a movie of her last published short story, Lust Caution, which again deals with failed romantic intrigue. Why do you think he chose that story?
I have to say I was surprised and then dazzled by Ang Lee's choice of this story. This story was first written in 1979. It's very late in the Eileen Chang oeuvre, although it does deal with her most typical setting, which is Shanghai under the Japanese occupation. But this story, Lust Caution, unlike pretty much anything else that she's written, is deeply influenced by Cold War fiction. And in fact, she even talks, she cites the thriller, spy thriller writer John le Carré as an influence on the way she framed the story. So when Ang Lee chose this story, he chose, as it were, a writer who in the Chinese world is an enormous megastar. For lack of better examples, I sometimes say she's sort of like Virginia Woolf and Madonna crossed, because she's an icon. She's an enormous figure in China. And he chose a story that is not well known. It's not often discussed in Chinese circles, at least not in my hearing. In Taiwan, which would be actually a place where people might be rather interested in this story, it hasn't received very much attention in scholarly or popular publications.
Perhaps that's a reason.
I think so. I think Ang Lee once again is making his mark by choosing a story by a great writer who's not known in the West. This will help to make her known, but at the same time, he's choosing something that Chinese readers would not have necessarily expected.
When Eileen Chang died in Los Angeles in 1995, it took 4 days for anyone to even realize that she was no longer alive because she'd become so reclusive. What had happened?
Well, she was always a very introverted person. But by the time she reached her even mid-50s, and certainly by the time she was in her 60s, and she died at the age of 75, she had become very reclusive. She worked at night, even when she had positions, like she had a position at the University of California at Berkeley, but she worked only at night. If you wanted to see her, you had to go in after sunset to go and find the famous writer. But not many people were looking for her. People didn't know. In this country, people had no idea that there was a writer like this in our midst. I'm very excited to see two of her English language novels have also recently been reprinted by University of California, which is quite fitting.
And this is a new translation.
No. Those are works she wrote in English.
Ah.
One of them is called The Rice Sprout Song, and the other one is called, Naked Earth has not been republished. The other one is called Rouge of the North. And right now I'm working on another translation, too.
Is she difficult to translate?
Yes. Yes. very, very worthwhile.
And the book that Karen Kingsbury has translated is Love in a Fallen City. Many people consider it Eileen Chang's greatest work, but there are any number of others, and we're seeing more and more being made available. Just keep on following her name in Amazon.com, and I suspect over the next few years you'll see quite a few. I want to thank you so much for talking about her as part of our Underappreciated series. Maybe she'll be a little more appreciated after this.
I would be so delighted. I think American readers will find a very interesting take on life if they read Eileen Chang's works.